Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
We have Paul DeCampo with me here today. Paul and I are going to be talking about follow-up and copywriting. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation. So head over to reiomnidrip.com to learn about what Paul and his team are up to. But I really appreciate your time here today.
I appreciate being here. So thank you, Jack.
So Paul, we're going to kind of break things down into two categories. We're going to start things off with the follow-up, and then we're going to go into the copywriting. I told you before we even hit record that I signed up for your OmniDrip ahead of time, so I would kind of experience what you are producing. And I do have to say, it's shocking the amount of material you produce. And what I think is a call out here is the consistency that I've been getting it. Can you talk about, let's start at the beginning. How did you find your way to this niche?
Yeah. So I'm an investor like most people listening. I started off wholesaling back in 2016. So I'm going to kind of condense everything into a TLDR version of this. In 2016, like everybody jumped into wholesaling. I was at the time a pipeline welder working for natural gas. I was a crew foreman, dump truck driver, backhoe operator, all that stuff, you know, digging holes in the mud and all that. So I did that for a while. I only stopped doing that back in 2021. 2021, I usually mix that up, but I think it was around 2021 where I stopped. And I also, at the time, I did wholesaling, but I also did land flipping. I also did some mobile home flipping as well, and to notes. So some note origination, and still hold those notes today. And how I got into copy with all that is I fell into it by accident because I really sucked at sales and marketing, which is when you're direct to seller, when you're going direct to seller, that's like the pinnacle of what you're doing. You're good at sales and or marketing, ideally both. And I remember, like, I had a CRM. I was using Drips. At the time, it was just Podio. CRM, the biggest breakthrough for CRMs was Podio back then. And people were building in different ways. And I had one, or I bought Inbox one from somebody and had their Drips. And I was doing a lot of direct mail, get those leads in, get them flowing in, see them up on my CRM. And then I'd go and have to follow up with them. Follow up was more like, you know, I feel like talking to Mr. Joe here. Let me give him a call. Well, you know what? I didn't really, you know, I spoke to him 2 weeks ago. I think I'll hold off. It's a little too soon. Hey, he told me call back in 3 months. I'm going to call back in 3 months. And that person ends up selling before the three month mark. Mm-hmm. So it was more of like, hey, I really suck at this. I really suck at sales. I really suck at marketing. So I dove into the rabbit hole of copy and marketing and sales as well. Although getting better at sales came later. I became a copywriter for Investor Care. That was my first client, Trevor Mock. And then from there, kind of, I springboard into different niches inside of copy, email, direct mail packages. I was writing direct mail packages for a big land developer out in Southern California. And today, and the transition to it being like my full-blown active income, where I'm writing for coaches, vendors, software providers within the real estate niche. And then OmniDrip was born, where we create the follow-up marketing, complete follow-up marketing, drip sequences, about 20 plus drip sequences, email, SMS, task to call, Loom video, all the strategies I use for follow-up, it's all implemented with investors' CRM, their existing CRM. So yeah, that's where I'm at today. That's kind of my journey throughout today. Today, as an investor, what I do today as an investor, I took an armchair approach where it's more of lending. I'm going to get into buying turnkey. I know that's like shocking for direct, if somebody who used to do direct to seller, but I had too many pumpkins, you know, pumpkins growing. I was copywriting. I was chasing sellers, doing land flipping, creating notes, rehabbing mobile homes. The only thing I really enjoyed the most was the actual copywriting part of it. I didn't enjoy anymore building a land flipping business. I had some volume in that a little bit. And so I just went in the route of what's going to get me out of my W-2 the quickest. And it was literally like overnight. Okay, I can take on a few more clients and I can quit my W-2 the next day. So,
you know, it's interesting. You said you had too many pumpkins growing. When you decided to start to focus, you already mentioned that your business started to take off a lot faster. Do you think it was part of that level of focus is what caused the growth?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, there's other things that compounded. There's failing moments in the past, right? Things that just didn't work out, and none of that is like, you know, like when I say failed projects, I mean like, you know, losing money on a flip and maybe trying out email copywriting and not doing really well. I mean, I sucked as a copywriter when I started off. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing until I started building the skill set and all that. All that was compiling knowledge and skill set to where I am today. So I would say that I don't know if I would have been where I'm at today if it wasn't for like the years of struggle, the years of learning. Because I'm blue collar. I came from blue collar. I only got into entrepreneurship when I was probably 28 or 29. And so that's a long time of not learning how to be an entrepreneur, which is an entrepreneur is different skill sets. It's not just marketing or sales, not just, hey, I want to start a business. And all that needs to come from somewhere. Yeah, and needs to come from this learning curve that you experience. So yeah, but to answer your question, yes, the one thing was that focus for the fastest growth. Yeah.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because that seems to be a recurring topic when it comes to a lot of people that come on the show is, you know, we're doing whatever we can in any direction. And it's almost out of desperation as we're trying to make a living at this real estate game. But time and time again, I run into entrepreneurs or real estate investors. It isn't until they start to focus and perfect one avenue is when things actually start to take off.
And I will say though that sometimes the focus doesn't come till later, and that's okay, because when you're starting out, you don't know really what to focus on. You're just throwing everything on the wall. And so I think there's a lot of like, quote, rules of thumb you hear online, social media about what you should be doing. That rule of thumb might not apply to your stage of life right now. So, for example, you hear rules of thumbs all the time about saying no to opportunities more often, right? Well, that doesn't apply to somebody who's starting out and actually needs to say yes to more things to get the experience. And understand what is it they're actually going to focus on. So that applies later on when you actually have more opportunities than you can handle.
So, you know, coming from the blue collar background you did, I mean, copywriting and follow-up and sales is completely different. I mean, a 180. I'd like to hear a little bit about the mindset shift that you might have had to go through to even see this as a possibility.
I think originates from a natural inclination to write or write well. So it originated from that. Like everybody has some kind of natural, I call it inclination, you know, I don't call it skill set yet because it's not really a skill, but something that you can do really well on out of the gate. And some people are great salespeople. I mean, anybody can be, I believe anybody can be a great salesperson over time, over training, over trying it, experiencing it. But there are certain people that gravitate or not gravitate, but get better at it or really good at it right from the start, certain personality traits. And so I gravitated towards more to the writing part of things because I just enjoyed it. I was actually pretty good at it and it only grew exponentially from there. So I think that's the biggest reason why I moved in that journey, that path, just because I saw an opening, went for it, I enjoyed it, and kept going at it.
So this was something that you've always had an interest in. It's just that you've now fine-tuned it to become your profession.
Yeah, I mean, I early on, I was getting paid doing it. I mean, when I started, I was writing a marketing email to imaginary list, selling an imaginary product. So that's how I first started practicing. I was practicing by handwriting by handwriting great sales letters from Gary Halbert, Gary Benson Vega, so Eugene Schwartz, these great copywriters from the past. And so handwriting that and then getting paid, getting these little, you know, by accident, getting these paid clients like Investor Carrot and investors as well. Investors hire me to do some SEO. That kind of emerged into SEO content. You just, when you're starting out, you're just trying to, you're experiencing everything and you're getting a grasp of just little bits here and there until finally you focus on this one thing. And so OmniDrip came about because I had people, investors coming to me to help them with their drip sequences. And so I started realizing that's an ongoing problem and there's already marketing in place about follow-up marketing. Everybody talks off the, you know, the magic is in the follow-up, the money's in the follow-up. It's already there. I didn't have to convince anybody of that. So it's just, I tagged on to that. And then I created this OmniDrip system in which it's my philosophies, my methodology, it's my messages, different variations of it, strategies and all that compiled and to help the investor make sure leads aren't lost. That's the biggest problem. Biggest problem that when I get on a call with somebody, biggest problem that they express to me is like, hey, Paul, I have 1,000 leads I haven't spoken to in a year. Okay, well, 20% of those I've probably sold already with somebody else. And second, now you have to treat it as a cold list. Like you can't just disrupt them and thinking that we're buddies and we've spoken before. They have no idea who you are if you've spoken to them from a year ago. So I fixed that problem by having a better way to follow up with them in a more systematic, automated, and more value-driven way. I have case studies that talk about how these long-term leads, and I, you know, there's different stages of a lead. You have your lead that needed to sell yesterday, their hair is on fire, and you can tie that up into a contract real quick. So those are, you know, small percentage of those sellers that exist, but they're there. And those are the ones that wholesalers and investors love. Then you have the ones that are retail, of course, and can't really do anything with that. Then you have the ones that need to sell later down the road. They've got other issues. You see it all the time. You see the ghosted lead, right? They respond, they fill out your form, they raise your hand to your direct mail piece, whatever it is. They're interested. They seem like they have a motivational situation. They're going through a divorce or they inherited the property, whatever it is. And all of a sudden they ghost you. Okay. Now that ghosting has anything to do with you. It usually has to do with their life. Like the reason why they called you is now the simmering pot on the back of the burner and they got a boiling over pot of something else, some other, you know, financial problem, a bill came due or whatever, or, you know, husband's trying to take the kids, whatever it is that's your thing is no longer in the front burner anymore. And so what do we do? Now, as I have a case study that shows for some of my clients, it takes, for these long-term leads that I'm talking about, they takes 70 touches or more to actually get them to say, hey, I had this going on. Let's move forward. I'm ready to take action, right? 70 touches.
Before you said seven?
Seven. Or 70. Yeah.
70.
Yeah.
Common thing is I've heard seven a lot, but you're saying you got to add a zero to that.
Yeah. Because here's the thing, that's that cliche of it takes 7 to 13 touches, you know, whatever that, you know, and it keeps increasing every year. It keeps going up one more. It started off as 7 and they added 8 and 9. Now it's 7 to 13. And that is a common misunderstood statement. That is for cold lead generation. That's not for follow-up. And so for follow-up, especially for the long-term leads, we're talking about the people who just aren't ready yet. And these encompass the majority of the market, okay? The ones that just, they're not ready to sell just right yet now, but they are motivated or they will be motivated. We're seeing 70 touches. We're seeing 100 touches. And what are touches? A touch is an SMS sent, a call attempt, voicemail script, a voicemail left, direct mail piece sent, even them visiting your website, reading one of your articles, which is a kind of a hidden touch that is kind of, for most CRMs don't record that quote touch. So all this, so the question then for the investor who knows this, and a lot of investors do know this, it takes a lot of touches to finally convert. I shouldn't say most, but they understand that it can take 6 months. It can take a year to finally convert these long-term leads. So the question is, what are you going to actually send them? You know, most of the answers are, I'm just going to ask them if they're ready to sell yet. Are you interested in selling in any kind of form of variation? Well, that marketing message, are you ready to sell? It's not a marketing message. It's a direct ask. It's 100% self-serving. It has no value in it. And so it's not a real marketing message. It's just a direct ask. Now, those are important, but are you going to say that 70 times, 100 times? So what I've created instead is a system that builds your credibility, builds your trust, and brings value as well. Because there's all kinds of different things you can say besides, are you still interested in selling? There's an investor struggle with that. When I was struggling as a wholesaler, going to appointments, not closing stuff, door knocking. I was door knocking foreclosures and probate leads, executors and heirs. I was struggling. I had an old school investor pull me to the side and say, hey, write down 100 different ways that you benefit a seller. And so that was inspirational for two reasons for me. One, it gave me, after I was done, I think I got to like 50. After I was done writing all of these reasons, all these ways that I benefit a seller, it built my confidence for one, because I realized, hey, it's more than just the cash offer. And two, later on in life today, it's actually, I mean, realize those are, that's actually fodder or material I can use for marketing. So for example, you know, a cash offer, a lot of investors, they assume that people know what every person knows what a cash offer is going to bring to the table, but a cash offer doesn't mean really much. Like, it's just a feature. It doesn't add any kind of benefit or value, or doesn't give any results really, but it's what it does at the end of the table. So at the end of the day, so it may, for example, save them from the embarrassment of selling their house in their neighborhood. So, you know, maybe they're struggling, they're behind in payments, whatever it is. They don't want to advertise their neighborhood that they're struggling. So putting a sign up, letting the world know they're selling is an embarrassment to them. They don't want people trampling through the house. Maybe they're a hoarder. They have tons of stuff and they're embarrassed by that. They have a bunch of junk that they can't take with them and they don't know what to do with. So a cash offer from a professional buyer guarantees that they don't have to worry about any of that. They can just leave all their stuff behind, right? So all these little things, there's tons of stuff that actual benefits, and we put those into the marketing messages. So for example, if I'm sending a message out, a text message to a landlord who's still on the fence about selling, he's got tenants in the house, I might say things like, hey, just a reminder, you know, we buy house. You don't have to worry about the mess that other buyers create with your tenant. We'll buy your house with the tenants in place and take care of your tenants for you, right? Or if it's an owner occupant, it's a hoarder, maybe they're still on the fence as well. You can say, hey, as a reminder, you can leave all your unwanted things behind with us. In a traditional sale, they're going to require you to clean up for every single buyer that walks through your house, but you just sell the house with one appointment with us. So, I mean, that's just me, you know, at the top of my head spitting out message, but usually a SMS message, I keep it brief and I keep it with one benefit installed. That way I every time I'm sending a message, it's a benefit that goes through and there's a slight call to action. I might say, hey, if you're ready to take a look at an offer, give me a call, right? Things of that nature. So, I mean, if people subscribe to my email list, they're going to get samples, they're going to get demo that explains it to actual see. I'm not really, me saying at the top of my head right now is not really doing justice of what the actual message looks like. But yeah, that's, you can say that's number one problem I solve is what do we say along their journey so that we're building value or giving them reasons why along the way and building the brand and credibility. And we're also front loading the messages, the sequences with links to drive them to our website, with reviews to build up that credibility, and with articles to build up the authority as well.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting there is that, you know, much like focusing on the business, your messages are very focused as well by the sounds of it. It's not just generic content.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I have something I do that's very different than what you see CRMs deliver is I have 20, 24, it'll probably be 25 by the end of March, different sequences we load up. And there, the reason why I do that is because I can then, if I know a seller or lead is in the offer too low, fixing themselves sequence. That's one of our sequences, right? So you gave them offer, they express to you that they're going to fix the house themselves. Well, now I have a objection that I can target that. Now I know what's going on and I could leverage things like that. I can give them value up front. I can say, hey, check out our 5 rehab items that give you the most bang for your buck. I can give like what I call a tips campaign. And this is one of the places I do it, one of the sequences I do it. I don't do it very often, but I can do a tips campaign, which is in marketing and in copy. That's where you're just sending them just tips about whatever it is that they're going through. So in this case, it's sending them tips about, hey, make sure you let your insurance know you're fixing the house, or they won't cover any damages. Make sure you're removing a mechanics lien from contractors that before you sell. All these little tips campaign. That way, I'm showing up with value, because we know that most of these people that are going to try fixing the house themselves, if they're truly motivated, in 3 months they'd be like, I haven't swung a hammer. I need to sell. Let me just call this guy that's been messaging, sending these messages here. So that's one example. I mean, so we have different sequences that follow a lead down the pipeline. So there's a pipeline that exists. There's all these little gateways that the seller has to pass through. All those gateways are marketing opportunities for us. And they're opportunities that we can leverage. So for example, a landlord tells you, you know, you give them an offer and they're not too sure yet. They have this, and that to do first. Well, great. I plug them into my selling delayed sequence that's specifically for landlords. We plug them in, and now I'm leveraging all the problems that landlords go through. I'm also leveraging their situation. It's a timing situation. So I'm not so aggressive with my messages. It's more of like showing up maybe every 15 days and 30 days. So yeah, that's kind of an example of what we do with our sequences.
Just to remind everybody, head over to reiomnidrip.com to get more information about what Paul is talking about here. And do me a quick favor. If you found some value in what we're discussing, share it with one of your investor friends. And better yet, if you're on YouTube, give us a quick thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. So, Paul, you know, based on what you're saying here, your sequences and campaigns are likely going for quite a long time. I think this is one of the bigger things that fall through the cracks when it comes to real estate investors. They get a no, they move on, or they stop following up after 2 weeks. But you're suggesting these sequences are going, I don't know, is it like a year? Like, how long are some of these sequences running?
Yeah, it depends on the sequence. If it's a very aggressive sequence, so we have a sequence for when somebody fills out a form or when you buy a PPL lead, a paper lead, those are a lot more aggressive upfront, and because that is somebody who's inquired about something. So the goal of that sequence is to get them into the next stage. The next stage is the appointment, to book, get them to book an appointment. So it's very aggressive up front where it's probably 7 to 8 steps in day one, and day two might have the same amount, and it starts to taper off. And then in 30 days, or I think 45 days, the sequence stops, but the sequence sends you a task. It says you a task, hey, evaluate this lead. This lead has not responded in 45 days. See if they've sold. If they haven't, move them over to the no appointment, no offer sequence. I don't necessarily have a sequence go on for years and years and years. Typically, it might be 1 year only. But then at the end of the sequence, there's a task that gets sent out to you that tells you to do something with this lead. Because right now, let me tell you why I don't have it just go on forever and ever and ever. Today, it's different today with SMS and email delivery, right? So they're tightening down and making sure they're tightening down on things being delivered, making sure that you're not spamming people. So long gone are the Wild West days where you can just blast anybody forever, forever, ever, and you won't have any consequences. So the consequences at best for doing something like that is deliverability goes down, your stuff ends up more often in spam or not delivered at all. So the way to achieve that, if you're trying to get your emails, you know, undelivered or in spam, or your SMS undelivered in spam, the way to achieve that is by sending a massive amount of messages to people that aren't reading it or aren't engaging in it. So at the 30-year mark, if it's, or 30-day mark, if it's the aggressive sequence, or if it's the 1-year mark for a longer term sequence, I'm telling you to do something with this lead, because if it hasn't responded in a year, you might want to consider checking to see if this person sold already. Because the worst thing you do is just send a massive amount of emails and text messages to people that just aren't even, yeah, there's no reason for them, you even be sending a message to them. Does that make sense, Jack? Because it's...
Yeah, it does. In fact, a lot of what we're talking about is really hitting home, because, you know, I think a lot of people who are using automation today, they may not even be aware of like the A2P requirements around SMS and phone numbers. And now you're absolutely right. Google announced some serious crackdowns on email delivery. So if you're not aware of those and what to do about them, you're just going to be throwing more money into a hole. You know, it's not going to happen.
And all this stuff, by the way, has existed for a long time. I mean, I've calculated out about 2,000 email blasts in my career, real live email blasts, different lists of 60,000 people and less. And so that's about an email a day for 5.5 years. So I know the game of email marketing, and SMS is very similar. The rules of SMS are no different than email. They exist under the same FCC umbrella. It's just that the consequences are a little bit more, not severe. I want to say no one's going to go to, well, not that I know of, but go to jail for this stuff. But they're looking at it now. Google's Gmail's now making sure that, you know, Gmail, you have to understand, Gmail's just trying to protect their consumers, their people, mm-hmm. their users. So they're just trying to make sure that all the spammers that are blowing up my inbox with, you know, about some kind of new guarantee or some kind of new car guarantee or some kind of, you know, Costco coupon that is really just a spammer, scammer. They're trying to get rid of those people. So they're cracking down. If you look like one of these people, and what does it look like to be one of these people? Well, you have a new email address that you're just blasting people off with. You're not getting any engagement with your email domain. So that's another thing. So what is engagement? Engagement is reply backs and clicks. That's what they consider engagement. And so I'm in my sequences, we try to front load, and we're improving this as the time goes by. We're loading up more engagement in the front end. I'm trying to get clever with engagement as well. It could be articles. It could be curiosity driven articles where they click to read something, getting reply back. So I want to front load sequences with engagement. That way it improves our investors' domain reputation. So yeah, that's, I mean, I'm going pretty deep on the technical stuff about it. Investors only care about, will this actually convert deals? Yeah, absolutely. We haven't had the only people that don't really convert deals with drip sequences in general are the people that just don't have a lot of lead generation to begin with. You know, so if anybody's new asking, do I need this? The question is probably not. You probably don't need any kind of drip sequence yet. You need to start focusing on going back to the one thing that we talked about earlier, Jack. Your one thing should be actually leads. How many leads, how many offers can I make on a weekly basis? And then once you start improving that, where it's a little more automated in a sense, and automated that it's more natural, you know how to make, you're getting offers out every week, and now you have a lot of leads that you can't handle anymore, then you start thinking about how can I improve. Now your one thing is, how can I improve the follow-up now on the back end of things? So drip sequences, I remember conversations in the past of people saying drip sequences don't work, and I've proved them wrong by showing them like the case studies, by showing them like by loading things up and showing them how it works. And it's not that drip sequences don't work, it's that the way they're using it doesn't work. See, because what CRMs usually do is they have one bucket for all the no contact Okay. And this is probably the worst way to follow up. So they have their leads, and all of a sudden the lead's not is ghosting them. It's not contacting them anymore. So they throw them into this no contact bucket, where you have probate leads, you have people who've been in an appointment, people have seen an offer, people have said no to offer, people said I'm not too sure. You have all these different types of people. So now you can't leverage any copy or any kind of problems or pain in that. You can't even leverage a call to action, because you can't even tell them what to do next. All you can do is ask them the question, are you still interested in selling? Because you have multiple types of people in there. But so when you spread it out with different buckets, now you have something to say. Now you have instructions on what to do next. See, if they haven't gotten an offer yet, that's your first call to action. That's your first goal, I should say. Get them into an appointment. So we have ways to do that where with my client, I make sure they have like a calendar link or a booking call link. So we'll integrate that in. We have some messages that go out to say, hey, book a call here, book an appointment here, or reply back to get your cash offer. Call me back to get your cash offer. We'll send mail as well. So I'm a big proponent of direct mail, follow-up direct mail. Not your mail that says, hey, we buy houses, but more so like, hey, you called us 2 weeks ago. We haven't heard back from you. Do you still want your cash offer? That type of conversation. So yeah, so that is, I don't know what question I was answering there, Jack, but I kind of...
No, I appreciated the rabbit hole. I mean, that was a lot of great information. I think that's some clarity there that a lot of people needed to hear. You know, I told you before we started, I have a CRM as well, realdealcrm.com, and people can do all of this automation and everything in it, but it's more on the individual to come up with the emails and content. That's where I think there's kind of a synergy between OmniDrip and what I do when it comes to the CRM, because I've seen time and time again a lot of individuals who just don't know the subtleties that you're referring to and what value they need to bring now when you're doing email and text messages. We're all getting spam. You got to have some value in there to just simply stand out. And we've been talking for quite a while here now, but I kind of wanted to touch a little bit on what type of tips and strategies you might have to get better at the sales side of things here now.
Yeah, definitely. And I've got about 10 minutes left less than 15. And so, yeah, we can dive into sales. Although I would say that, you know, I dove into copywriting because I was more natural at that. Sales, it definitely was not natural at. So the only experience I have with land flipping, all that direct to seller, you're getting face to face, belly to belly with sellers. But when you're an introvert like myself, and that skill set doesn't come very natural, it's a long learning curve. It's many years of trying things and being afraid to try things. And so I would say the biggest tip for sales, and you're asking about like face to face or phone to phone sales, right? Mm-hmm. So the biggest tip I would say is two or three things. First is one, really believing and having enthusiasm about whatever you're selling. And if you're in acquisitions, you're selling something, you're selling a cash offer, you're selling all the things attached to a cash offer. You're enthusiastic and really believe that whatever you're doing is going to help the other person, right? So that's number one. Like that, I mean, you hear this, it's like, okay, that's people might be rolling their eyes like, okay, we've heard this before. That was the big game changer for me is when you start getting people like reviews and you start getting excitement at the end of the table about what you just sold them or what just happened when, you know, they signed your contract, you improved their life somewhat. Maybe you got them into their new house faster, whatever it was. You need to remember that. You really need to take note of that. If you print it up, or, you know, if they can leave you a review, if they leave you a glowing review, print it out and put it on your wall. Like have a wall of testimonials for you to remind yourself of what you actually bring to the marketplace. Because that's the number one thing to selling is actually believing that you can help the other person. I know that sounds cliche, but it really, that's spun me 180 degrees in my ability to convert and close. Okay. Second thing is the closing part. So being pretty aggressive about if the person actually qualifies for what you sell, for your offer, right? And you really believe that you can help them, that this was the big, another 180 for me that turned the table for me, is if you understand that, you believe that, doing what it takes to actually get them to buy with you or to go with you, because, you know, having people who, there's people who want to think about it, and I get that, but usually that can turn into a lost deal, a lost contract, a lost close. But if it's right then and there and they're ready and they're qualified to do business today, they're qualified to do it. That's important key factor. They're qualified to do business with you today, and there's nothing else in the way. There's no, and you know 100% you can help them. There's no reason for you not to close that. And so I say that as in a sense of it's, you know, acquisitions, but also OmniDrip, because I get on, I'm the sole salesperson for OmniDrip. And if I believe that I can help you 100%, like I want to do the business with you. I want to get these drip sequences in. You've got 500 leads that you haven't followed up with. I want those to be followed up because they're going to convert to somebody else. If there's a deal in there, it's going to sell to somebody else. And I want to get the drips into your system today and get it going. Well, it won't be today because it takes time for us to create semi-custom messages for you. But as soon as possible, we want to get those messages in for you. So when I understand, when I know that, I truly do believe that. And because I have the reviews, I have people coming in, I have saying how it's improved their deal flow. I know that 100%. I want to do what I can to make sure we move forward. Not because, hey, they're paying me. Of course, I mean, of course that's important for me, obviously, but more so importantly that I'm actually helping them. So that's, I kind of went in a long answer to your question. But those are the number two things. I mean, there's no tactics involved. There's no closing statements. It's just a mindset going in that you really believe it and you're ready to close this.
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to relate to something you just said there. I'm quite an introvert as well. In fact, when I started this podcast, it was one of those things I kind of forced myself to do it. Sales has always been something, you know, I think as an introvert, you start to hide behind some of that automation. And you do need to have those interactions. And I'm going to steal this in the fact that there's a book called The Introvert's Edge when it comes to sales. And if you're an introvert or you find yourself an introvert, you'll learn that as an introvert, it's kind of a superpower actually when it comes to sales that a lot of people you should take advantage of. So I'd point people to that book to get some more detail there. Paul, this has been a fantastic conversation. There was so much value you brought to the audience here today. I know you felt like you were kind of going down some rabbit holes, but I was thankful and just wanted to let you go. Before I let you go, however, I want to remind everybody to reiomnidrip.com. I'm going to have that as a clickable link in the show notes. I do have some rapid fire questions, but before we get into those, is there a question or concept you think we should have tried to cover here today that we might have missed?
Well, there's always stuff to have a conversation. The thing about introverts, by the way, and I wrote down that book. I'm going to go check it out. The thing about introverts is they actually like to talk. They like to talk about what the things they love and they're passionate about, right? As certain introverts. But yeah, no, I think that we've covered a lot, but let's go on to the rapid fire questions.
First off, what lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
What lie do they? I'm going to go, oh, here's a good one. That they've tried it. All right. So you'll go to RIA meetings and you get a lot of pessimism about certain marketing tactics and methods. You know, oh, direct mail doesn't work here. Oh, really? Okay. So tell me about how it doesn't work. Well, you know, I send out 1,000 letters. It's not really trying. Like that's not, you know, there's somebody, my friend, Brian Driscoll at Motivated Leads, he owns Motivated Leads. He said something very interesting. He said, everything works and nothing works. So what he meant by that is, yeah, if you put out 5 bandit signs per week, yeah, that doesn't work. But if you put out 5,000 bandit signs per week, yeah, that actually has that brings traction. So yeah, that's a lie. I think if people saying they tried it, no, that's kind of a lie. You didn't actually really do it or try it.
Yeah. I would point people to the previous, I did recently have an interview with Brian again. He's been on the show a couple of times. He's a really good guy. So check out that episode as well. Kind of a deviation from my rapid fire questions. Can you give me one email drip example or SMS message that you see consistently that real estate investors are sending out that just makes you cringe?
Yeah. So the tactics in the subject line of like RE or FWD purposely put in there so you can open up an email. That makes me cringe every single time. In fact, when I get those, I'll just hit the spam on you. So I get the idea. It's, hey, I want to increase my open rates, so I'm going to put these little tactics. It's all tactical thinking. It's not principle-based thinking. The problem with that is, especially if this is to a list of like warm people that you already know, the problem with that is that you've just created a little layer of distrust, right? Because especially if they open it up because of that. You know, I've opened it up. I think, oh, okay, they're replying to something I sent. Let me open. This is nothing. You create a little layer of distrust with that person. And relationship is the most powerful element in marketing. Like that, there's no, in persuasion, there's nothing. You know, you have all these tactics, you have all these hooks, you have your hook, your offer, and all, but relationship is the most powerful one. That's what drives somebody from, you know, not trusting you to trusting you to then finally say, I trust him enough to actually do business with him. And so when I do email marketing, that is at the base layer of my pyramid where everything is driven from. It's relationship driven. Am I hurting or am I improving the relationship with my email list when I do this? So that's a mistake I think a lot of people make.
Do you have a book recommendation or what are you reading right now?
Yeah, I'm reading Sam Walton's autobiography. I think that's a fantastic book, by the way. So it's just called Sam Walton and fantastic story. I just got done reading Les Schwab's autobiography. So that's pretty good as well. That was Charlie Munger's favorite book. And I'm also, let me see, I'm usually reading three books at a time. The audiobook I'm listening to is Flip the Script, which is actually a really good selling book. It doesn't say anything about selling, but it's just a book on selling.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Do it enough with enough volume and as fast as you can. So that's kind of vague, but I would say, you know, your 20s is your most prime. That's like your most prime time. You don't have kids. You're not married. And it's like most of us 20-year-olds who start entrepreneurship later, I'd say we wasted a lot of, and we're not wasted. Don't want to say wasted. You know, it's never a wasted life when you're having fun and all that. But the amount you can accomplish with that much free time. Like if I could only give them a look at this is what your life looks like, you know, how much time you actually, and the lack of time you have compared to now. It's like, you know, and so yeah, if I could somehow communicate that, I'd love to. But yeah.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has had the biggest impact, time-saving impact on your business?
Yeah. I don't know about time saving, but okay. So let's say I'm going to give two here. One is handwriting my to-do list, like task list, and then numbering it based off of priority and only having three things there that I need to accomplish for the day. So that's one for productivity. All right. We have a long to-do list, but I like to narrow it down to what's the one thing, going back to the one thing again, what's the one thing that makes everything else unnecessary or easier. So that's one. I do handwrite my tasks. And then two, I'd say my CRM, I use Trello. So I use Trello because I like Kanban method. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's basically visually see whatever you're working on, go through the pipeline. So when I was running my own podcast, I would do that. The very first thing is, okay, getting it edited, right? So that the card flows into that. So that's the first thing. So every project, every client I have, there's a flow of what needs to happen. that helps me to visually see where my projects are at. So,
sure. And for one user, I think you could, or for a small team, Trello is free. So people take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Again, Paul, this was a great conversation. One more time, reiomnidrip.com. Take a look at what Paul and his team are up to, but really appreciate your time. This was great.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciate being on here, Jack. Thank you.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.